ABC Radio Australia.
Now, joining me here in the studio will be Tuvalu's Climate Change Minister, Dr. Maina Taalia. That's coming up very, very soon. But right now, I have a song out of Tuvalu. This is from One Soul Band, Te Ola Polonga. Out of Tuvalu, that was One Soul Band with Te Ola Polonga. And if you've seen the music video, you'll notice something striking. The band is performing on a stretch of sand that not long ago was actually water. That ground didn't exist. It's reclaimed land built as part of the Tuvalu Coastal Adaptation Project. For a country where the highest natural point sits just a few meters above sea level and where climate change is threatening every day, building higher ground has become a matter of survival. The project began back in 2017 and has now reclaimed more than 15 hectares of elevated land designed to stay above projected sea level rise beyond the year 2100. Overseeing that project and Tuvalu's broader climate strategy is the country's climate change minister, Dr. Maina Talia, who joins me in the studio this morning. Talofa, Minister Talia.
Good morning, Talofa.
Lovely to have you here. Now, that song there, as we mentioned there, One Soul Band, in the music video, they're standing on that reclaimed land. It's been a long project and a long time coming to reclaim those 15 hectares, almost 10 years. For you personally, when you first got to stand on that reclaimed land, how did you feel?
Well, first of all, thank you so very much for the opportunity to have this dialogue this morning, which is, I believe, is important when it comes to the survival of our people and also our adaptation strategies that we are trying to implement in Tuvalu. It is very interesting to work closely with my team and also with the government of Australia, New Zealand and other partners who were able to put in money to that adaptation project, TCAP. Every time we have an additional land, because right now we are losing land to the sea, so it's not just a blessing for the country, but also it's an assurance that life continuity on the island is possible. So having this new reclamation land, it's purely an assurance to our people that life is still possible on the island.
And for you, yeah, when you were there, there was an opening of it, there was a celebration of it. How was it for you personally? How did you feel about it?
I feel personally that, when we did the handing over of the project to the government of Tuvalu with the recent, because we have the original TCAP, and also the second TCAP, which we call TCAP 1A, and the letters will continue A, B, C, D, E. But I think I feel that it's not just life continuity on the island, but also an assurance that, we are able to practice our own culture, our own way of life, our values attached to the land. With this new land, it's a promise that we will definitely continue to live on our land.
You mentioned there that the project was made possible in part by funding from the Australian government. Of course, at the same time, Australia continues to approve new coal and gas developments contributing to global warming, which is, of course, contributing to the loss of land in Tuvalu. How do you reckon with those two realities?
I think it's more or less a moral discussion that needs to be happening right now. And how do we see how Australia look into opening new coal mines and approving new coal mines in Australia while, the Pacific neighbour or Tuwako is literally facing all this existential threat. Again, it's not just about money, but it's about how Australia can support small countries that we call our neighbour. So at the moment, the past few years, which I have been trying to call the country Australia for support, and especially to do away with the opening of coal mines. Unfortunately, I understand that this is the backbone for the economy of Australia, but they are transitioning away from opening new coal mines. But it's so unfortunate because it's the opening of new coal mines does not only limit to a 5-year project, but it requires a lot of years to come.
And would you say that Tuvalu doesn't have that time to wait?
We are running out of time. Anything to do with climate change and sea level rise, we're dealing with time, and we cannot just pick up the pace that the negative effect of climate change on our land and our people. It's just too fast. I was born and raised in Tuvalu and still in Tuvalu, and I would definitely not live in Tuvalu. So it's difficult to understand the rate, the level of the sea is climbing too fast. But only if we have the resources to respond systematically to what we are going through, then I think it's fair enough. But at the moment, we don't have that resources. That's why we continue to rely on industrialized countries that have the resources and the technology to ensure that we can respond systematically to what is going on, what is happening to our people and our land.
What's your message for Australia while you're here in the country now?
I think the message is very simple. If we continue to burn fossil fuel, if we continue to open new coal mines, and definitely, on the other hand, we are letting go of our moral responsibility. We're letting go of countries like mine to go underwater. And it's very unfair if we continue to open coal mines and do the opposite, especially when we're co-hosting the Australia-Pacific Pre-COP, the upcoming one. So I think we have to show some moral clarity, show some moral leadership in terms of bringing the Conference of the Party closer to home.
Your doctoral research explores climate change through Indigenous wisdom, biblical teaching and geopolitics, and your thesis centered on the idea of being a neighbour. What does it mean in a time of climate crisis, in practical terms, for Australia to be that good neighbour, as you say, with the combined pre-hosting of the COP and as Australia continues to push coal and gas expansions?
Well, I think the whole concept of tuakoi does not limit, or the neighbourly love does not limit to someone living next door to you, but it's basically a geopolitical neighbour. What does it mean to be neighbour in the context of geopolitics and climate change? I think that's the question that we as human beings should continue to answer and hold countries to account on the very basis that, you know, we need to do good in order for us to maintain the survival of those who are in need, countries like mine. So I think basically to become a good neighbour, I think to do what is ought to be done, the moral responsibility of countries like Australia and bigger countries like the US, we need to hold them to account.
You said there that, Australia does have an economic stake in its coal and gas developments and exports of fossil fuels. You're talking there about appealing to morality, to consciousness. How has that been for you? How has that journey with the Australian government been in appealing to morality on this topic of climate change?
It's really difficult. And I think when I was once a climate activist, I always want to bring in that strand of that morality, that moral responsibility, because I purely believe that this was something that is missing in the narrative. The UN don't talk about moral values. The UN does not talk about neighborly love, you know, things that are more practical to the context of Tuvalu, the context of the Pacific Islands. And if we want to talk about families, if we want to bring the elements of families into our development narrative, if we want to bring in the neighborly love into our development narrative, I think we need to live that out. You know, we need to practice. We need to bring in some practicality of things that we need to show the people living next door to us that this is what we are doing to ensure that, you know, you continue to live on your island. This is what we are doing to ensure that you continue to practice your culture. Because definitely, we don't want people to come to Australia. We don't want Tuvaluans to leave their land, their God-given land, and to come to Australia. If you ask the rest of the, most of the people in Tuvalu that, do you want to live Tuvalu? Do you want to go to Australia? The answer from our elders and our people, you know, we want to continue to live here a very simple life. We don't want to end up in a very complicated context of, you know, so difficult to comprehend, difficult to understand different economic system that, you know, operates here in Australia. For us, it's very simple. You live happily with your neighbour.
And speaking of that, of course, Tuvalu and Australia are together in the Falapili Union Treaty, which has provided a pathway for Tuvaluans to live in Australia. Much of the media narrative around this, of course, has framed it in the context of climate change, having headlines calling the Tuvaluans moving to Australia climate migrants, that people are fleeing Tuvalu, that Tuvalu is disappearing. And you mentioned there that most Tuvaluans don't actually want to leave Tuvalu. They would like their land to remain, their culture to remain. when you have that narrative around climate migrants, what impact does that have on Tuvalu and Tuvaluans? And what's your tension with that labelling?
For me, as a climate activist and now climate minister for Tuvalu, it's very disheartening to hear that we are being labelled as climate migrants, which is equally on the basis of being called climate refugees, which is something that we do not want to be labelled as. We don't want to become second-class citizen in another country for something that we did not cause. Our contribution to climate change and sea level rise is almost next to nothing. And yet we have to face the reality of life. So for us, that is difficult for us to accept, because how the news came out and, you know, how the media have framed this falapili arrangement between Australia and New Zealand, you know, becomes a very have a negative impact on our on us. It seems to be that we want to flee our country, we want to leave our countries and our country and to come to Australia. But I think the narrative should frame around, of course, is a pathway, a migration pathway, a pathway in which the government should play the role of finding ways to ensure that our people, if they are chose to live to Tuvalu, you know, they have a fair, safe pathway to go to another country, to go to Australia. But I think it's not just on that narrative of people fleeing the country because of climate change. But I think the narrative should develop from the fact that people flee or leave the country for economic prosperity. And I think purely outside of the package of the falapili, the intention is to have our people exposed to work, education, health, and always have that tendency of going back home. It's not a one-way street. People, you know, we're not encouraging people to come to Australia. We are providing that pathway for people to have options on the table with the intention of coming back home.
Well, Minister, we have come to the end of the show, but thank you so much for joining me here in the studio today.
Thank you so very much.
That was Tuvalu's Climate Change Minister, Dr. Maina Taalia, speaking with me there.